But hearing myself say it aloud cut to the core. Who was I anymore? I didn't recognize myself, and it was the worst feeling I'd ever experienced. Somewhere along the way, I'd lost myself, and as easy as it was to blame Devilcraft, I had made the choice to steal that first bottle from Dante. At last, Patch spoke. His voice was so steady, so full of quiet admiration, it made me wonder if he could have known my secret all along. Did you know, the first time I saw you, I thought, I've never seen anything more captivating and beautiful. Why are you telling me this? I said miserably. I saw you, and I wanted to be close to you. I wanted you to let me in. I wanted to know you in a way no one else did. I wanted you, all of you. That wanting nearly drove me mad. Patch paused, inhaling softly, as though breathing me in. And now that I have you, the only thing that terrifies me is having to go back to that place. Having to want you all over again with no hope of my desire ever being fulfilled. You're mine, Angel. Every last piece of you. I won't let anything change that. I propped my weight on my elbow, staring at him. I don't deserve you, Patch. I don't care what you say, it's the truth. You don't deserve me, he agreed. You deserve better. But you're stuck with me, and you might as well get over it. Scooping me under him in one agile movement, he rolled on top of me, his black eyes all pirate. I have no intention of letting you go easily, something to keep in mind. I don't care if it's another man, your mother, or the powers of hell trying to pry us apart. I'm not easing up, and I'm not saying goodbye. I blinked my wet lashes. I'm not letting anything come between us either, especially not Devilcraft. I have the antidote in my purse. I'll take it right now. And Patch, I added with heartfelt emotion, thank you for everything. I don't know what I'd do without you. Good thing, he murmured, because I'm not letting you get away. I sank back on his bed, happy to oblige. Chapter 32. Sure enough, word of my requested meeting with Nephilim higher-ups spread. By Sunday afternoon, Nephilim channels buzzed with anticipation and speculation. I was getting all the press, and news of Dante's announcement had fizzled. I'd stolen the show, and Dante hadn't put up any protest. I had no doubt Patch was right. Dante was putting his plans on hold until he could see my next move. Scott called every hour with an update, which was usually to tell me the latest theories Nephilim were churning out in regard to my first combative strike against fallen angels. Ambush, destroying lines of communication, sending in spies, and kidnapping fallen angel commanders had all made the glorified list. As Patch had predicted, the Nephilim had quickly concluded that war was the only reason I'd call a meeting. I wondered if Dante had jumped to the same conclusion. I wished I could say yes. I had him fooled. But experience told me he was cunning enough to know better. He knew I was up to something. Big news, Scott said excitedly over the phone. The bigwigs, high-powered Nephilim, have accepted your request for a meeting. They've determined the location, and it's not Delphic. Also, they are keeping things cozy. As might be expected, it's an invitation-only party. 20 Nephilim at most. No leaks. Lots of guards. Every Nephil invited will be screened before entering. Good news is, I'm on the guest list. Took some schmoozing, but I'll be there with you. Just tell me the location already, I said, trying not to sound nauseated. They want to meet at Hank Miller's old house. My spine tingled. I would never be able to erase those arctic blue eyes his name summoned to mind. I pushed his ghost aside and focused. A classy Georgian colonial in a respected human neighborhood? It didn't seem shady enough for a covert Nephilim meeting. Why there? The higher-ups thought it showed a nod of respect to the Black Hand. Good call, I say. He started this whole mess, Scott added snidely. Keep talking like that, and they're going to boot you off the guest list. The meeting has been scheduled for 10 tonight. Keep your cell phone close in case I learn anything else. Don't forget to act surprised when they call with the details. Can't have them thinking they've got a spy problem already. One more thing. I'm sorry about Dante. I feel responsible. I introduced you. If I could, I'd dismember him, and then tie a brick to each of his limbs, take them to sea, and throw them overboard. Chin up. I've got your back. I hung up and turned toward Patch, who'd been leaning against the wall and watching me carefully throughout the conversation. "Meeting is tonight," I told him, "at the old Miller residence." I couldn't bring myself to finish the thought bearing down on my mind. A private home? Screenings? Guards? How on earth would Patch ever get in? To my great discouragement, it looked like I was going in without him tonight. "That works," Patch said calmly. "I'll be there." I admired his cool confidence, but I didn't see how he could possibly sneak in unnoticed. "The house will be highly guarded. The minute you set foot on the block, they'll know. Maybe if they'd selected a museum or the courthouse, but not this. The Miller house is big, but not that big. They'll have every square inch covered." "Which is exactly what I planned for. I've already worked out the details. Scott is going to let me in." "It won't work. They'll be expecting fallen angel spies, and even if Scott does unlock a window for you, they will have thought of it. Not only will they capture you, but they'll know Scott's a traitor." "I'm going to possess Scott's body." I flinched. Slowly, his solution came together in my mind. Of course. It was Heshvan. Patch would have no problem taking control of Scott's body. And from an outsider's perspective, there would be no way to tell the difference between the two. Patch would be welcomed into the meeting without a batted eye. It was the perfect disguise. Only one tiny little problem. Scott will never agree to it. "He already has." I stared back in disbelief. "He has? He's doing this for you." My throat suddenly closed up. There was nothing in the world Scott fought harder for than to keep fallen angels from possessing him. I realized at that moment just how much my friendship must mean to him. For him to do this, the one thing he abhorred. There were no words. Just a deep, aching gratitude for Scott and the determination not to fail him. "Tonight I need you to be careful," I said. "I'll be careful, and I won't overstay my welcome. The minute you're out of the meeting safely, and I've stayed long enough to learn all I can, Scott will have his body back. I'll make sure nothing happens to him." I squeezed Patch into a fierce hug. "Thank you," I whispered. Later that night, an hour before 10, I departed Patch's home. I left alone, driving a rental car at the request of my Nephilim hosts. They dotted every I and crossed every T and weren't taking any chances of having me followed by nosy Nephilim, or worse, any fallen angel who might have caught wind of tonight's top-secret meeting. The streets were dark and slick under a film of fog. My headlights swept across the black ribbon of pavement that rolled over hills and around curves. I had the heater cranked, but it never quite cast out the chill dancing in my bones. I didn't know what to expect tonight, and that made it difficult to plan. I'd have to play things by ear, my least favorite way to go. I wanted to walk into the Miller house with something to hold onto besides my own instincts, but that's all I had. Finally, I pulled up in front of Marcy's old house. I sat in the car a moment, gazing at the white columns and black shutters. The lawn was lost under withered leaves. Brown twigs, the remnants of hydrangeas, jutted from the twin terracotta pots flanking the porch. Newspapers in various states of decay littered the walkway. The house had been vacated after Hank's death and didn't look as inviting or elegant as I remembered. Marcy's mom had moved into a condo on the river, and Marcy, well, Marcy had taken the phrase, "Mi casa es su casa," to heart. Faint lights glowed behind draped windows, and while they didn't reveal silhouettes, I knew several of the Nephilim world's most influential and powerful leaders sat just behind the front door, waiting to form judgments on the news I was about to deliver. I also knew Patch would be there, making sure no danger befell me. Clinging to that thought, I drew a jagged breath and marched to the front door. I knocked. The front door opened and I was ushered inside by a tall woman whose eyes lingered on me just long enough to confirm my identity. Her hair had been combed back in a tight braid and there was nothing either remarkable or memorable about her face. She murmured a polite but reserved, "Hello," and then, with a stiff sweep of her hand, directed me deeper into the house. The tap of my shoes echoed down the dimly lit hallway. I passed portraits of the Miller family, smiling behind dusty glass. A vase of dead lilies sat on the entryway table. The whole house smelled bottled up. I followed the trail of lights toward the dining room. As soon as I stepped through the French doors, the hushed conversation died. There were 6 men and 5 women seated on each side of a long, polished mahogany table. A few more Nephilim stood around the table, looking both fidgety and apprehensive. I almost did a double take when I saw Marcy's mom. I knew Susanna Miller was Nephilim, but it had always felt like an intangible thought drifting at the back of my mind. Seeing her here tonight, convening a secret meeting of immortals, made her suddenly feel threatening. Marcy wasn't with her. Maybe Marcy hadn't wanted to come, but a more plausible explanation was that she hadn't been invited. Susanna seemed like the kind of mother who bent over backward to keep her daughter's life clear of even the tiniest complication. I found Scott's face in the crowd. Knowing Patch was possessing him, the clanging in my stomach took a momentary reprieve. He caught my eye and inclined his head, a secret nod of encouragement. A deep feeling of assurance and security flooded me. I wasn't in this alone. Patch had my back. I should have known he'd find a way to be here, no matter the risk. And then there was Dante. He sat at the head of the table, wearing a black cashmere turtleneck and a ponderous frown. His fingers were steepled over his mouth, and when his eyes locked with mine, his lips twitched with a sneer. His eyebrows lifted in discreet but unmistakable challenge. I looked away. I turned my attention to the elderly woman in a purple cocktail dress and diamonds, seated at the opposite end of the long table. Lisa Martin. Second to Hank, she was the most influential and respected Nephil I'd met. I didn't like or trust her. Feelings I was going to have to suppress for the next several minutes if I wanted to get through this.
"We're so glad you instigated this meeting, Nora." Her warm, regal, and accepting voice slipped like honey into my ears. My racing heart slowed. If I could get her on my side, I was halfway there. "Thank you," I managed at last. She gestured at the empty seat beside her, beckoning me to sit. I walked over to the chair, but I didn't sit. I was afraid I'd lose my nerve if I did. Leaning my hands on the table for support, I bypassed pleasantries and launched into the true meaning of my visit. "I'm aware that not everyone in this room thinks I'm the best person to lead my father's army," I stated bluntly. The word father tasted like bile in my mouth, but I remembered Patch's admonition to attach myself to Hank any way I could tonight. Nephilim worshipped him, and if I could use his endorsement, even a backdoor endorsement, I should. I made eye contact with everyone seated at the table and a few standing behind it. I had to show them I had fortitude and courage, and most of all that I was displeased with their lack of support. "I know some of you have already come up with a list of men and women better suited for the task." I paused again, turning the full weight of my gaze on Dante. He held my stare, but I saw hatred sizzle behind his brown eyes. "And I know Dante Materazzi is at the top of that list." A murmur circled the room, but no one disputed my claim. "I didn't call you here tonight to discuss my first offensive strike in the war against fallen angels. I called you here because without a strong leader and your approval of that individual, there won't be a war. Fallen angels will tear us apart. We need unity and solidarity," I urged them with conviction. "I believe I am the best leader, and my father thought likewise. Clearly, I haven't convinced you. Which is why tonight, I am challenging Dante Materazzi to a duel. The winner leads this army once and for all." Dante shot to his feet. "But we're dating!" His expression painted a perfect portrait of shock mingled with wounded pride. "How can you suggest dueling me?" he said, his voice sagging with humiliation. I hadn't expected him to plead our utterly fake relationship, built on the weak foundation of my spoken agreement and never carried out. A relationship I had forgotten immediately, and that now soured in my bones. But it didn't startle me into silence. I said coolly, "I'm willing to take down anyone. That's what leading the Nephilim means to me. I hereby officially challenge you to a duel, Dante." Not a single Nephil spoke. Surprise registered in their expressions, quickly followed by satisfaction. A duel. Winner take all. Patch had been right. Nephilim were still fully entrenched in an archaic world, ruled by Darwinian principles. They were pleased by this turn of events, and it was crystal clear from the adoring eyes they cast in Dante's direction that not one Nephil in the room doubted who the winner would be. Dante tried to keep his face impassive, but I saw him smile softly at my folly and his own good fortune. He thought I'd blundered all right, but his eyes immediately narrowed with wariness. Apparently, he wasn't going to lunge for the bait headlong. "I can't do that," he announced. "It would be treason." His eyes swept the room, as if to gauge whether his gallant words had won him any further approval.
I've given my allegiance to Nora, and I couldn't think of doing any act that would contradict it.
As your commander, I'm ordering you to duel, I retorted crisply. I was still leader of this army, damn it, and I wasn't going to let him undermine me with smooth words and flattery. If you truly are the best leader, I'll step aside. I want what is best for my people. I had rehearsed the words 100 times, and while I was giving a well-practiced speech, I meant every word. I thought of Scott, of Marcy, of thousands of Nephilim I'd never met but still cared about, because I knew they were good men and women who didn't deserve to be enslaved by fallen angels every year. They deserved a fair fight, and I was going to do my best to give them one. I'd been wrong before, shamefully wrong. I'd avoided fighting for the Nephilim out of fear of the Archangels. Even more reprehensible, I'd used war as an excuse to get more devilcraft. All this time, I'd been more concerned with myself than the people I'd been charged with leading. That ended now. Hank had trusted me with this role, but I wasn't doing it for him. I was doing it because it was the moral thing to do.
"I think Nora has made a strong point," spoke Lisa Martin. "There is nothing more uninspiring than leadership propagating itself. Perhaps the Black Hand was right about her."
A shrug.
"Perhaps he made a mistake. We will take the matter into our own hands and settle it once and for all. Then we can go to war against our enemies, unified behind a strong leader."
I gave her a nod of appreciation. If I had her on my side, the others would step into line.
"I agree," Anaphil across the room spoke up.
"As do I."
More ratifying buzzed through the dining room.
"All in favor, make it known," said Lisa.
One by one, hands shot up. Patch locked eyes with me, then raised his arm. I knew it killed him to do it, but we were out of alternatives. If Dante swept me out of power, I would die. My only chance was to fight and try my hardest to win.
"We have a majority," Lisa said. "The duel will take place at sunrise tomorrow, Monday. I will send word of the location once it has been determined."
2 days, Patch immediately interjected, speaking in Scott's voice. "Nora has never shot a pistol before. She'll need time to train."
I also needed to give Pepper time to return from heaven with his enchanted dagger, hopefully making the duel a moot point. Lisa shook her head.
"Too long. Fallen angels could come against us any day now. We have no idea why they've waited, but our luck might not hold."
"And I never said anything about pistols," Dante spoke up, eyeing Patch and me shrewdly as though trying to guess what we were up to. He watched my face for any hint of emotion. "I'd prefer sabers."
"It's Dante's call," Lisa stated. "The duel was not his idea. He reserves the right to choose the weapon. You've settled on sabers, then?"
"More ladylike," Dante explained,
squeezing every last ounce of approval from his Nephilim peers. I stiffened, resisting the urge to send Patch a plea for help.
"Nora has never touched a sword in her life,"
Patch argued, again speaking through Scott's voice.
"It won't be a fair fight if she can't train. Give her until Tuesday morning."
No one was quick to support Patch's request. The disinterest in the room was so thick I could have reached out and punched it. My training was the least of their concerns. In fact, the sooner Dante was in power, their impassive attitude said, the better.
"Are you taking it upon yourself to train her, Scott?"
Lisa asked Patch.
"Unlike some of you, I haven't forgotten she's still our leader,"
Patch answered with a cold edge. Lisa tilted her head as though to say, "Very well."
"Then it's decided. 2 mornings from now. Until then, I wish you both the best."
I didn't hang around. With the duel rolling forward and my part in this dangerous plan upheld, I let myself out. I knew Patch would have to stay a little longer to gauge the room's reaction and possibly overhear vital information, but I found myself wishing he'd hurry. This wasn't a night I wanted to be alone. Chapter 33. Knowing Patch would be occupied until the last of the Nephilim left the Miller's old house, I drove to V's. I was wearing my jean jacket with the tracking device and knew Patch would be able to find me if he needed to. In the meantime, there was something I needed to get off my chest. I couldn't do this on my own anymore. I'd tried to keep V safe, but I needed my best friend. I had to tell her everything. Figuring the front door wasn't the best way to reach V at this time of night, I picked my way carefully through her yard, hopped the chain-link fence, and tapped on her bedroom window. A moment later, the curtains were flung aside and her face appeared behind the glass. Even though the hour was creeping up on midnight, she hadn't changed into PJs. She raised the window a few inches.
"Boy, you picked a bad time to show up. I thought you were Scott. He's on his way over any minute now."
When I spoke, my voice sounded hoarse and shaky.
"We need to talk."
V didn't miss a beat.
"I'll call Scott and cancel."
She slid the window all the way open to invite me in.
"Tell me what's on your mind, babe."
To her credit, V didn't scream, sob hysterically, or flee from the room the moment I finished telling her the fantastical secrets I'd kept to myself the past 6 months. She'd flinched once when I'd explained that Nephilim were the progeny of humans and fallen angels, but other than that, her expression had remained free of horror and disbelief. She listened attentively as I described two warring races of immortals, Hank Miller's role in everything, and how he'd dumped his baggage in my lap. She even managed to smile slightly as I lifted the cloak on Patch and Scott's true identities. When I finished, she merely cocked her head, scrutinizing me. After a moment, she said,
"Well, that explains a lot."
It was my turn to blink. "Seriously? That's all you have to say? You aren't, I don't know, stunned? Confused? Bewildered? Hysterical?" V tapped her chin contemplatively.
"I knew Patch was way too hardcore to be human."
I was starting to wonder if she'd even heard me say that I wasn't human.
"What about me? You're completely cool with the idea that not only am I Nephilim, but I'm supposed to be leading all the other Nephilim out there?"
I thrust my finger at the window. "Into war against fallen angels?"
"Fallen angels, V. Like in the Bible? Heaven's banished evildoers."
"Actually, I think it's pretty incredible." I scratched my eyebrow. "I can't believe you're being so calm about this. I expected some kind of reaction. I expected an outburst. Based on past experience, I anticipated flailing arms and a healthy dose of swearing at the very least. I might as well be divulging this to a brick wall."
"Babe, you're making me sound like a diva."
That brought a quirk to my lips. "You said it, not me."
"I just think it's really weird that you said the easiest way to spot Nephilim is by their height. And you, my friend, aren't extraordinarily tall," said V. "Now take me, for instance. I'm tall."
"I'm average height because Hank..."
"Got it. You already explained that part about swearing an oath to become Nephilim while you were human. Hence the average physique. But it still kinda sucks, right? I mean, what if the changeover vow had made you tall? What if it had made you as tall as me?"
I didn't know where V was going with this, but I felt like she was missing the point. This wasn't about how tall I was. This was about opening her mind to an immortal world that wasn't supposed to exist. And I'd just burst the secure little bubble she'd been living in.
"Does your body heal rapidly now that you're Nephilim?" V continued. "Because if you didn't get that perk, you really got shortchanged."
I stiffened. "V, I didn't tell you about our accelerated healing capabilities."
"Huh. I guess you didn't."
"How could you possibly know, then?" I stared at V, revisiting every word of our conversation. I had definitely not told her. My brain seemed to struggle forward in slow motion. And then, just like that, understanding came rushing at me much too fast to digest. I covered my mouth with my hand.
"You?"
V smirked.
"I told you I was keeping secrets from you."
"But it can't be. It's not
possible."
"Yeah, that's what I thought at first, too. I thought I was going through some kind of whacked-up second menstruation thing. These past couple weeks I've been tired and crampy and totally pissed off at the world. Then, a week ago, I cut my finger while slicing an apple. It healed so fast, I almost thought I'd imagined seeing blood. More weird stuff happened after that. In PE, I served the volleyball so hard it hit the back wall on the opposite side of the court. During weights, I had no problem lifting what the bulkiest guys in the class were lifting. I hid it, of course, because I didn't want to draw attention to myself until I figured out what was happening to my body. Trust me, Nora, I am 100% Nephilim. Scott caught on to it right away. He's been teaching me the ropes,
and helping me cope with the idea that 17 years ago, my mom did the deed with a fallen angel. It's helped knowing Scott went through a similar physical change and realization about his own parents. Neither of us can believe it's taken you this long to figure it out. She punched my shoulder. I felt my jaw hanging stupidly agape. You. You're really Nephilim. How could I not have seen it? I should have detected it in an instant. I could with any other Nephil, or fallen angel for that matter. Was it because V was my very best friend in the world, and had been for so long, that I couldn't view her any other way? What has Scott told you about the war? I asked at last. That's one of the reasons he was coming over tonight, to bring me up to speed. 'Twould appear you're a big deal, Miss Queen Bee, leader of the Black Hand's army. V let out an appreciative whistle. Dang, girl. Make sure to stick that on your resume. Chapter 34. I wore nothing but tennis shoes, shorts, and a tank top when I met Patch early the following morning on a rocky piece of coastline. It was Monday, Pepper's deadline. It was also a school day, but I couldn't worry about either of those things now. Train first, stress later. I dropped my hands in bandages, anticipating that Patch's version of training would put Dante's to shame. My hair was pulled back in a tight French braid, and my stomach was empty except for a glass of water. I hadn't ingested Devilcraft since Friday, and it showed. I had a headache the size of Nebraska lodged in my head, and my vision seesawed in and out of focus when I turned my head too sharply. A jagged hunger clawed inside me. The pain was so fierce, I couldn't catch my breath. Upholding my promise to Patch, I'd taken the antidote Saturday night directly after confessing my addiction, but apparently the medication took a while to run its course. Probably didn't help that I'd pumped large quantities of Devilcraft into my system over the past week. Patch wore black jeans and a matching t-shirt that hugged his form. He rested his hands on my shoulders, facing me. Ready? Despite the grim mood, I smiled and cracked my knuckles. Ready to wrestle with my gorgeous boyfriend? Oh, I'd say I'm ready for that. Amusement softened his eyes. I'll try to control where I put my hands, but in the heat of things, who knows what could happen? I added. Patch grinned. Sounds promising. All right, trainer, let's do this. At my word, Patch's expression turned focused and businesslike. You haven't been trained in swordsmanship, and I'm guessing Dante has had more than his fair share of practice over the years. He's as old as Napoleon, and probably came out of his mother's womb waving a cuirassier's sword. Your best bet is to strip him of his sword early and move quickly into hand-to-hand combat. How am I going to do that? Patch picked up two sticks near his feet that he'd cut to approximately the length of a standard sword. He tossed one through the air, and I caught it. Draw your sword before you begin fighting. It takes more time to draw a sword than it does to get struck. I pretended to draw my sword from an invisible scabbard at my hip and held it at the ready. Keep your feet shoulder-width apart at all times, Patch instructed, engaging me in a slow, relaxed parry. You don't want to lose your balance and trip. Never move your feet close together, and always keep the blade close to your body. The more you lean or stretch, the easier it will be for Dante to knock you over. We practiced footwork and balance for several minutes, the blunt clashing of our makeshift swords ringing out above low tide. Keep a close eye on Dante's movements, Patch said. He'll settle into a pattern right away, and you'll start to learn when he's going to move for an attack. When he does, launch a preemptive strike. Right. Going to need a role play for that one. Patch slid his feet forward rapidly, swinging his sword down on mine so forcibly the stick vibrated in my hands. Before I could recover, he made a swift second blow, sending the sword sailing out of my grip. I picked up my sword, wiped my brow, and said, I'm not strong enough. I don't think I'll ever be able to do that to Dante. You will, once you've weakened him. The duel is set to take place at sunrise tomorrow. Following tradition, it will be outside, somewhere remote. You're going to force Dante into a position where the rising sun is in his eyes. Even if he tries to reverse your positions, he's tall enough that he'll shade the sun's rays from your vision. Use his height to your advantage. He's taller than you, and it will expose his legs. A hard strike to either knee will unbalance him. As soon as he loses his stance, attack. This time I reenacted Patch's earlier move, forcing him off balance with a hit to his kneecap, followed by a rapid succession of strikes and blows. I didn't strip him of his sword, but I did thrust the tip of my own against his exposed midsection. If I could do that to Dante, it would be the turning point of the duel. Very good, Patch said. The entire duel will most likely take less than 30 seconds. Every move counts. Be cautious and level-headed. Don't let Dante goad you into making a reckless mistake. Dodging and sidestepping are going to be your greatest defenses, especially in an open clearing. You'll have enough room to avoid his sword by sliding out of its path quickly. Dante knows he's like a zillion times better than me. I arched my eyebrows. Any wise words of advice to cope with a complete and utter lack of confidence? Let fear be your strategy. Pretend to be more frightened than you are to lull Dante into a false sense of superiority. Arrogance can be deadly. The corners of his mouth crept up. But you didn't hear me say that. I hung my mock sword over my shoulders like a baseball bat. So basically, the plan is to strip him of his sword, deliver a fatal blow, and claim my rightful position as leader of the Nephilim. A nod. Sweet and simple. Another 10 hours of this, and you'll be a pro. If we're doing this for 10 hours, I'm going to need a little incentive to stay motivated. Patch hooked his elbow around my neck and dragged me into a kiss. Every time you strip my sword, I owe you a kiss. How's that sound? I bit my lip to keep from giggling. That sounds really dirty. Patch waggled his brows. Look whose mind just rolled into the gutter. 2 kisses per strip. Any objections? I pulled on an innocent face. None whatsoever. Patch and I didn't stop dueling until sunset. We'd demolished 5 sets of swords and stopped only for lunch and for me to receive my awarded kisses, some of which lasted long enough to draw the attention of beachcombers and a few joggers. I'm sure we looked insane, darting about on the craggy rocks while swinging wooden swords at each other hard enough to leave bruises and, very likely, a few cases of internal bleeding. Fortunately, my accelerated healing meant the worst of my injuries didn't interfere with our training. By dusk, we were covered in sweat, and I was thoroughly exhausted. In just over 12 hours, I would duel Dante for real. No makeshift swords, rather steel blades sharp enough to sever a limb. The thought was sobering enough to make my skin prickle. Well, you did it, I congratulated Patch. I'm as trained as I'll ever be. A lean, mean sword-fighting machine. I should have made you my personal trainer from day one. A rogue smile surfaced, slow and wicked. No match for Patch. I agreed, glancing up at him coyly. Why don't you head back to my place for a shower, and I'll pick up takeout from the borderline? Patch suggested as we trudged up the rocky embankment toward the parking lot. He said it casually enough, but the words drew my eyes directly to his. Patch had worked as a busboy at the borderline the first time we met. I couldn't drive past the restaurant now and not think of him. I was touched that he remembered, and to know that the restaurant held special memories for him, too. I forced myself to put all thought of tomorrow's duel and Pepper's slim chance at success out of my mind. Tonight, I wanted to enjoy Patch's company without worrying what would become of me. Us. If I had to duel and Dante won. Can I put in a request for tacos? I asked softly, remembering the first time Patch had taught me to make them. You read my mind, Angel. I let myself into Patch's townhouse. In the bathroom, I stripped out of my clothes and untangled my braid. Patch's bathroom was magnificent. Deep blue tiles and black towels. A freestanding tub that would easily fit too. Bar soap that smelled like vanilla and cinnamon. I stepped into the shower, letting the water beat over my skin. I thought of Patch standing in the same shower, arms braced against the wall as water poured over his shoulders. I thought of pearls of water clinging to his skin. I thought of him using the same towels I was about to wrap around my own body. I thought of his bed, just feet away, of how the sheets would hold his scent. A shadow slid across the bathroom mirror. The bathroom door was cracked, light spilling in from the bedroom. I held my breath, waiting for another shadow, waiting for time to tell me I'd imagined seeing one. This was Patch's home. No one knew about it. Not Dante, not Pepper. I'd been careful. No one had followed me tonight. Another dark cloud drifted over the mirror. The air crackled with supernatural energy. I shut off the water and knotted a towel around my body. I looked for a weapon. I had a choice of a roll of toilet paper or a bottle of hand soap. I hummed softly under my breath. No reason to let the intruder know I was onto them. The intruder moved closer to the bathroom door. Their power jolted my senses with electricity, the hairs on my arms standing alert like stiff flags. I continued to hum. From the corner of my eye, I saw the doorknob turn, and I was done waiting.
I shoved my bare foot against the door with a grunt of exertion. It splintered, breaking off the hinges as it flew outward, knocking over whoever was behind it. I lunged through the entrance, fists bared, ready to attack. The man on the floor curled into a ball to protect his body.
"Don't," he croaked. "Don't hurt me."
Slowly, I lowered my fists. I cocked my head sideways for a better look.
"Blakely?"
Chapter 35.
"What are you doing here?" I demanded, hitching up the bath towel to keep myself covered. "How did you find this place?"
"Weapon. I needed one." My eye scanned Patch's meticulous bedroom. Blakely might look compromised now, but he'd been manipulating Devilcraft for months. I didn't trust him not to have something sharp and dangerous and blue-tinted hidden beneath his trench coat.
"I need your help," he said, raising his palms as he crawled to his feet.
"Don't move," I snapped. "On your knees, keep your hands where I can see them."
"Dante tried to kill me."
"You're immortal, Blakely. You're also teammates with Dante."
"Not anymore. Now that I've developed enough Devilcraft prototypes, he wants me gone. He wants to control Devilcraft exclusively. He used a sword I enhanced specifically to kill you and tried to use it against me. I barely got away."
"Dante ordered you to make a sword that would kill me?"
"For the duel."
I didn't yet know Blakely's endgame, but I didn't put Dante past using forbidden and lethal methods to win the duel.
"Is it as good as you say? Will it kill me?"
Blakely looked me squarely in the eye.
"Yes."
I tried to calmly process this information. I needed a way to disqualify Dante from using his sword, but first things first.
"More.
I suspect Dante is working for Fallen Angels."
I didn't bat an eye.
"What makes you say that?"
"All these months, and he's never allowed me to make a weapon that will kill Fallen Angels. Rather, I've developed a whole host of prototypes that were supposedly aimed at killing you. And if they can kill you, they can kill any Nephil. Since Fallen Angels are the enemy, why have I been developing weapons that hurt Nephilim?"
I remembered my conversation with Dante at Rollerland over a week ago. "Dante told me that with enough time you'd be able to develop a prototype strong enough to kill a Fallen Angel."
"I wouldn't know. He's never given me the chance."
In a risky move, I decided to come clean with Blakely. I still didn't trust him, but if I gave a little, he might too. And right now, I needed to know everything he did.
"You're right. Dante is working for Fallen Angels. I know this for a fact."
For a moment, he shut his eyes, taking the truth hard.
"I never trusted Dante. Not from the beginning. Bringing him on board was your father's idea. I couldn't convince Hank not to do it then, but I can avenge his name now. If Dante is a traitor, I owe it to your father to destroy him."
If nothing else, I had to give Hank credit for inspiring loyalty. I said, "Tell me more about the Devilcraft super drink. Since Dante is working for Fallen Angels, why would he have you develop something that would aid our race?"
"He never distributed the drink to other Nephilim like he told me he would. It's only strengthening him, and now he has all the prototypes. The antidote, too."
Blakely squeezed between his eyes. "Everything I worked for. He stole it." My damp hair clung to my skin and chilled water dripped down my back. Goosebumps stood out on my flesh, from cold and Blakely's words, both. "Patch will be here any minute. Since you were apparently clever enough to find his home, I'm guessing you were looking for him."
"I want to ruin Dante."
His voice vibrated with conviction.
"You mean you want Patch to ruin him for you? What was it with evildoers trying to hire my boyfriend as a mercenary? Granted, he'd worked as one in a past life, but this was starting to get ridiculous and irritating. What happened to taking care of one's own problems?"
"What makes you think he'll do it?"
"I want Dante to spend the rest of his life in misery, isolated from the world, tortured to the breaking point. Patch is the only one I trust to do it. Price isn't an issue."
"Patch doesn't need money."
I stopped, holding the thought. An idea had just come to me, and it was as devious as it was manipulative. I didn't want to take advantage of Blakely, but then again, he'd hardly been gracious to me in the past. I reminded myself that when push came to shove, he'd driven a knife enhanced with Devilcraft deep inside me, introducing me to a toxic addiction.
"Patch doesn't need your money, but he does need your testimony. If you agree to confess Dante's crimes at the duel tomorrow in front of Lisa Martin and other influential Nephilim, Patch will kill Dante for you." Just because Patch had already promised to kill Dante for Pepper didn't mean we couldn't take advantage of circumstances and position ourselves to gain something from Blakely as well. The expression, two birds with one stone, hadn't come from nowhere after all. Dante can't be killed. Imprisoned eternally, yes, but not killed. None of the prototypes work against him. He's immune because his body... This is a job Patch can handle, I fired back tersely. If you want Dante dead, consider it done. You have your connections, and Patch has his. Blakely studied me with a contemplative, discerning gaze. He knows an archangel, he guessed at last. You didn't hear it from me. One more thing, Blakely. This is important. Do you hold enough clout with Lisa Martin and other powerful Nephilim to turn them against Dante? Because if not, we're both going down tomorrow. He only debated a minute. Dante charmed your father, Lisa Martin, and several other Nephilim from the beginning, but he doesn't have the history with them that I do. If I call him a traitor, they'll listen. Blakely reached into his pocket and offered me a small card. I need to retrieve a few important items from my home before I relocate to my safe house. This is my new address. Give me a head start, then bring Patch. We'll work out the details tonight. Patch arrived minutes after Blakely left. The first words out of my mouth were, "You'll never believe who just stopped by." With that captivating hook, I launched into my story, relaying to Patch every word from my conversation with Blakely.
"What do you make of it?" Patch asked when I finished.
"I think Blakely is our last hope."
"You trust him?"
"No, but your enemy's enemy."
"Did you make him swear an oath to testify tomorrow?"
My heart sank. I hadn't thought of it. It was an honest mistake, but it made me wonder if I'd ever be a worthy leader. I knew Patch didn't expect perfection from me, but I wanted to impress him just the same. An idiotic voice inside my head questioned whether Dabria would have made the same mistake. Doubtful. When we meet him tonight, it will be the first thing I take care of.
"It makes sense that Dante would want to control Devilcraft exclusively," Patch mused. "And if Dante thought Blakely suspected him of working for fallen angels, he would kill him to keep his secret safe."
I said, "Do you think Dante told me about Devilcraft that day at Rollerland because he anticipated that I'd tell you and you'd go after Blakely? I've always wondered why he told me. Looking back, it almost seems like he had a strategy, for you to snatch Blakely and bury him from the light of day, leaving Dante alone to control Devilcraft."
"Which is exactly what I had planned, until Marcy upset those plans."
"Dante has been undermining me from the start," I realized.
"Not anymore. We have Blakely's testimony."
"Does that mean we're meeting him?" Patch had set the keys to his motorcycle on the kitchen counter not 5 minutes ago, and he reached for them again.
"Never a dull moment, Angel."
The address Blakely had given me took us to a single-story red brick home in an older neighborhood. Two shaded windows flanked the front door. The sprawling property seemed to swallow the little cottage whole. Patch drove around the block twice, eyes sharp, then parked down the street out of the reach of the streetlights. He gave the front door three solid raps. A light burned behind the living room window, but there were no other signs that someone was home.
"Stay here," Patch told me. "I'm going around back."
I waited on the stoop, glancing behind me at the street. It was too cold for the neighbors to be out walking the dog, and not a single car drove past. The front door lock tumbled, and Patch opened the door from within.
"Back door was wide open. Got a bad feeling," he said.
I stepped inside, shutting the door behind me. "Blakely," I called out softly. The house was small enough to make raising my voice unnecessary.
"He's not on the first floor," Patch said, "but there are stairs leading to a basement."
We took the stairs and turned into a lit room. I sucked in a breath as my eyes focused on the trail of red liquid smeared across the carpet. Red handprints painted the wall and led in the same direction, to a dark bedroom straight ahead. In the grainy shadows, I could just make out the outline of a bed, and Blakely's body crumpled beside it. Patch's arm immediately shot out, blocking me.
"Go upstairs," he ordered.
Without thinking, I ducked under Patch's arm and rushed toward Blakely. "He's hurt!" The whites of Blakely's eyes sizzled an ethereal blue. Blood trickled from his mouth, gurgling as he tried unsuccessfully to speak.
"Dante did this?"
Patch asked him, following directly behind me. I crouched down, checking Blakely's vital signs. His heartbeat thrummed weakly and erratically. Tears stung my eyes. I didn't know if I was crying for Blakely or for what his death would mean for me, but I suspected, selfishly, it was the latter.
Blakely coughed blood, his voice threadbare. Dante knows, fallen angel's feathers.
I gave Patch's hand a numbing squeeze. How can Dante know about the feathers? Pepper wouldn't have told him, and we're the only other two who know.
If Dante knows about the feathers, he'll try to intercept Pepper on his way back to Earth. Patch answered tensely. We can't let him get the feathers.
Lisa Martin, here, soon, Blakely rasped, each word a struggle.
Where is the lab? I asked Blakely. How can we destroy Dante's supply of devilcraft? He gave his head a hard shake as if I'd asked the wrong question.
His sword, he doesn't know. Lied. Kill him too.
He choked hoarsely, more blood washing over his lips. The blood had turned from red to fiery blue.
Okay, I understand, I said, patting his shoulder to console him. The sword he's going to duel with tomorrow will kill him too, only he doesn't know it. This is good, Blakely. Now tell me where the lab is.
Tried tell you, he croaked. I shook Blakely's shoulders. You didn't tell me. Where is the lab? I didn't believe destroying the lab would change the outcome of tomorrow's duel. Dante would have plenty of devilcraft in his system when we fought. But no matter what happened to me, if Patch could destroy the lab, devilcraft would vanish once and for all. I felt personally responsible for putting the powers of hell back in, well, hell. We have to go, Angel, Patch spoke to my thoughts. Lisa can't see us here. It doesn't look good. I rattled Blakely harder. Where is the lab? His bald hands relaxed. His eyes, glazed that chilling shade of blue, stared vacantly up at me.
We can't waste any more time here, Patch told me. We have to assume Dante is going after Pepper and the feathers.
I dried my eyes with the heels of my hands. We're just going to leave Blakely here? The sound of a car pulling to a stop sounded on the street outside.
Lisa, Patch said.
He shoved the bedroom window open, hoisted me into the window well, and leaped up beside me.
Any last respects to the dead have to be said now.
Casting a mournful look back at Blakely, I said simply, good luck in the next life. I had a feeling he'd need it. We sped off through the woodsy back roads on Patch's motorcycle. Heshvan's new moon had started nearly 2 weeks ago, and now it hung like a ghostly orb high overhead, a wide, watchful eye we couldn't escape. I shivered and snuggled closer against Patch. He rocketed around the narrow bend so fast that tree branches began to blur into flashes of skeletal fingers reaching out to snare me. Since yelling above the roar of wind was impractical, I resorted to mind speak.
Who could have told Dante about the feathers?
I asked Patch.
Pepper wouldn't risk it.
Neither would we.
If Dante knows, we can assume the fallen angels do too. They're going to do everything they can to keep us from getting those feathers, Angel. No course of action will be ruled out.
His warning came through all too clear. We weren't safe. We have to warn Pepper, I said.
If we call him and the archangels intercept it, we'll never get the feathers.
I glanced at the time on my cell phone. 11. We gave him until midnight. He's almost out of time.
If he doesn't call soon, Angel, we're going to have to assume the worst and come up with a new plan.
His hand dropped to my thigh, squeezing. I knew we were sharing the same thought. We'd exhausted every plan. Time was up. Either we got the feathers, or the Nephilim race would lose more than the war. They'd be in bondage to fallen angels for eternity. Chapter 36. A muted jingle rang from my pocket. Patch immediately steered the motorcycle to the roadside, and I answered the call with a prayer in my heart.
I have the feathers,
Pepper said, his voice high and quivering. I exhaled in relief and gave Patch a high five, curling my fingers between his, locking our hands together. We had the feathers. We had the dagger. Tomorrow morning's duel was no longer necessary. Dead opponents didn't wield swords, enchanted or otherwise.
Good work, Pepper, I said. You're almost done. We need you to hand over the feathers and the dagger, and then you can put this behind you. Patch will kill Dante as soon as he gets the dagger, but you need to know Dante is after the feathers, too.
There wasn't time to break it to him gently. He wants them as badly as we do. He's looking for you, so don't let your guard down, and don't let him get the feathers or the dagger. Pepper sniffled.
I'm scared. How do I know Dante won't find me? And what if the archangels notice the feathers are missing? His volume shot up to a screech.
What if they figure out it was me?
Calm down. Everything will be fine. We're going to make the transfer at Delphic Amusement Park. We can meet you in about 45 minutes.
That's almost an hour. I can't hold the feathers that long. I have to dump them. That was the deal. You never said anything about babysitting them. And what about me? Dante is after me. If you want me to hang on to your feathers, then I want Patch to go after Dante and make sure he's not a threat to me.
I explained this, I said impatiently. Patch will kill Dante as soon as we have the dagger.
A whole lot of good that will do me if Dante finds me first. I want Patch out there this minute, going after Dante. In fact, I won't give you the dagger until I have proof that Patch has Dante.
I pulled the phone away to save my eardrums from Pepper's hysterical shrieks. He's cracking, I told Patch worriedly. Patch took the phone from me. Listen up, Pepper. Take the feathers and the dagger to Delphic Amusement Park. I'll have two fallen angels meet you at the gates. They'll make sure you get safely inside my studio. Just don't tell them what you're carrying. Pepper's squeaked response crackled from the phone. Patch said, put the feathers in my studio, then stay put until we get there. A loud wail. You aren't leaving the feathers unguarded, Patch argued, each word breathed with murderous intent. You're going to sit on my sofa and make sure they're still there when we get there. More frantic squawking. Stop blubbering. I'll hunt Dante down now if that's what you want, then come get the dagger, which you're going to sit on until I meet you at the studio. Go to Delphic and do exactly as I told you. One more thing, stop crying. You're giving archangels everywhere a bad name. Patch hung up and handed the phone back to me. Keep your fingers crossed that this works. Do you think Pepper will stay with the feathers? He dragged his hands down his face, a sound escaping his throat that sounded half harsh laugh, half groan. We're going to have to split up, Angel. If we hunt down Dante together, we risk leaving the feathers unguarded. Go find Dante. I'll take care of Pepper and the feathers. Patch studied me. I know you will, but I still don't like the idea of leaving you alone. I'll be fine. I'll guard the feathers and I'll call Lisa Martin right away. I'll tell her what I have and she'll help me execute our plan. We're going to end the war and free Nephilim. I squeezed Patch's hand reassuringly. This is it. The end's in sight. Patch rubbed his jaw, clearly unhappy, thinking deeply. For my own peace of mind, take Scott with you. An ironic smile crept to my mouth. You trust Scott? I trust you, he answered in a husky voice that made me feel warm and slippery inside. Patch backed me into a tree and kissed me, hard. I regained my breath. Boys everywhere, take note. That was a kiss. Patch didn't smile. His eyes darkened with something I couldn't name, but it put a weight in my stomach. His jaw locked, the muscles along his arms tensing just as visibly. We're going to be together at the end of this. A cloud of uneasiness passed over his expression. If I have anything to say about it, yes. Whatever happens tonight, I love you. Don't talk that way, Patch, I whispered, emotion catching my voice. You're scaring me. We are going to be together. You'll find Dante, then meet me at the studio where we'll end this war together. Doesn't get any more straightforward. He kissed me again, delicately on each eyelid, then each cheek, and at last a soft seal across my lips. I'll never be the same, he said in a gravelly tone. You've transformed me. I folded my arms around his neck and pressed my body hard to his. I clung to him, trying to cast out the chill that tapped in my bones. Kiss me in a way I'll never forget. I drew his eyes toward mine. Kiss me in a way that will stay with me until I see you again. Because we will see each other soon. Patch's eyes grazed me with silent heat. My reflection swirled in them, red hair and lips aflame. I was connected to him by a force I couldn't control, a tiny thread that tethered my soul to his. With the moon at his back, shadows painted the faint hollows beneath his eyes and cheekbones, making him look breathtakingly handsome and equally diabolical. His hand steadied my face, holding me still before him. The wind tangled my hair around his wrists, twining us together. His thumbs moved across my cheekbones in a slow, intimate caress. Despite the cold, a steady burn coiled up inside me, vulnerable to his touch. His fingers traced lower,
lower, leaving behind a hot, delicious ache. I closed my eyes, my joints melting. He lit me up like a flame, light and heat burning at a depth I'd never fathomed. His thumb stroked my lip, a soft, seductive tease. I gave a sharp sigh of pleasure. "Kiss you now?" he asked. I couldn't speak. A wilted nod was my reply. His mouth, hot and daring, met mine. All play had left him, and he kissed me with his own black fire, deep and possessive, consuming my body, my soul, and laying waste to all past notions of what it meant to be kissed. Chapter 37. I heard Scott's Barracuda rumble down the road toward me long before the headlights flashed through the murky darkness. I flagged him down and swung into the passenger seat. "Thanks for coming." He shoved the car in reverse and floored it the same way he'd approached.
"You kept your call short. Tell me what I need to know."
I explained the situation as quickly yet comprehensively as possible. When I finished, Scott let out a low whistle of astonishment. "Pepper's got every fallen angel feather ever? Surreal, right? He is supposed to meet us at Patch's studio. He'd better not leave the feathers unguarded," I muttered mostly to myself.
"I can get you safely beneath Delphic. The park gates are closed, so we'll go into the tunnels using the cargo elevators. After that, we'll have to use my map. I've never been to Patch's place."
The tunnels referred to an underground network of convoluted, maze-like passageways that operated like streets and neighborhoods beneath Delphic. I'd had no idea they existed until I met Patch. They served as the primary residence for fallen angels living in Maine, and until recently, Patch had lived among them. Scott steered the Barracuda down an access road short of the park's main entrance. The road opened to a loading dock with truck ramps and a warehouse. We entered the warehouse through a side door, crossed an open space stacked wall-to-wall with boxes, and at last reached the cargo elevators. Once inside, Scott ignored the normal buttons indicating floors 1, 2, and 3, and pressed a small, unmarked yellow button at the bottom of the panel. I'd known there were entrances to the tunnels all over Delphic, but this was my first time using this particular one. The elevator, which was almost as large as my bedroom, clanged lower and lower, at last grinding to a stop. The heavy steel door rose, and Scott and I walked out onto a loading dock. The ground and walls were dirt, and the only light came from the single bulb swinging like a pendulum overhead. "Which way?" I asked, peering into the tunnel ahead. I was grateful to have Scott as a guide through the underbelly of Delphic Amusement Park. It was immediately clear that he traversed the tunnels regularly. He led at a hurried pace, sweeping down the dank corridors as though they had long ago been committed to memory. We referenced the map, using it to make our way beneath the Archangel, Delphic's newest roller coaster. From there, I took over, glancing down corridors randomly, until at last we came to what I recognized as the entrance to Patch's old living quarters. The door was locked from the inside. I rapped on it. "Pepper, it's Nora Gray, open up." I gave him a few moments, then tried again. "If you're not opening because you sense someone else, it's Scott. He's not going to beat you up. Now open the door."
"Is he alone?" Scott asked quietly.
I nodded. "Should be."
"I don't sense anybody," Scott said skeptically, bending his ear toward the door.
"Hurry up, Pepper," I called. Still no response. "We're going to have to break down the door," I told Scott. "On the count of three. 1, 2, 3. In unison, Scott and I landed forceful kicks to the door. "Again," I grunted. We continued to drive our soles into the wood, striking it until it splintered and the door slammed inward. I strode across the foyer and into the living room, looking for Pepper. The sofa had been knifed multiple times, stuffing spewing from each incision. Picture frames that had once decorated the walls now lay shattered on the ground. The glass coffee table was tipped on its side with an ominous crack down the center. Clothes from Patch's wardrobe had been dragged out and thrown like confetti. I didn't know if this was evidence of a recent struggle or left over from Patch's hasty departure nearly 2 weeks ago, when Pepper had hired thugs to destroy the place.
"Can you call Pepper?" Scott suggested. "Do you have his number?"
I punched Pepper's number into my phone, but he didn't pick up.
"Where is he?"
I demanded angrily to no one in particular. Everything was riding on his end of the bargain. I needed those feathers, and I needed them now.
"And what is that smell?"
I asked, wrinkling my nose.
I walked deeper into the living room. Sure enough, I detected a noxious, acrid smell wafting in the air. A rotten smell. A smell almost like hot tar, but not quite. Something was burning. I ran from room to room, trying to find the feathers. They weren't here. I shoved open the door to Patch's old bedroom and was immediately overwhelmed by the smell of burning organic material. Without pausing to think, I ran to the far wall of the bedroom, the one that slid open to reveal a secret passageway. The moment I cracked the sliding door, a thunderhead of black smoke rolled into the room. The greasy, charred stench was unbearable. Sealing my mouth and nose with the collar of my shirt, I called to Scott, "I'm going in!" He strode through the doorway behind me, batting the smoke with his hand. I'd been down the passageway once before when Patch had momentarily detained Hank Miller before I'd killed him, and I tried to remember the way. Dropping to my knees to avoid the worst of the smoke, I crawled quickly, coughing and gagging every time I drew breath. At last my hand struck a door. Fumbling for the ring pull, I jerked on it. The door swung slowly open, sending a fresh wave of smoke billowing into the corridor. The light from a blazing fire flashed through the smoke, flames leaping and dancing like an exquisite magic show, brazen gold and molten orange and great plumes of black smoke. An awful crackling and snapping sounded in my ears as the flames devoured the massive hill of fuel beneath it. Scott viced my shoulders protectively, forcing his body in front of mine like a shield. The heat from the fire broiled our faces. It only took me a moment to howl in terror. Chapter 38. I shot to my feet first. Oblivious to the heat, I charged the fire while sparks rained down like fireworks. I clawed at the towering hill of feathers, shrieking with panic. Only two of Patch's feathers from his days as an archangel remained. One feather we held for safekeeping. The other had been taken and meticulously stored by the archangels when they'd banished Patch from heaven. That feather was somewhere in the pile before me. Patch's feather could be anywhere, maybe already burned. There were so many, and an even greater number of ash flecks floated like singed pieces of paper around the fire. "Scott, help me find Patch's feather!" Think, I had to think. Patch's feather, I'd seen it before. "It's black, all black," I blurted. "Start looking, I'll go get blankets to smother the fire." I raced back toward Patch's studio, the smoke forming a screen across my eyes. Suddenly I came up short, detecting another body in the tunnel just ahead. I blinked against the smoke grinding into my eyes. "It's too late," Marcy said. Her face was puffy from crying and the tip of her nose glowed red. "You can't put out the fire." "What have you done?" I yelled at her. "I'm my dad's rightful heir. I should be leading the Nephilim." "Rightful heir? Are you listening to yourself? Do you want this job?" "I don't. Your dad forced it on me." Her lip wobbled. "He loved me more. He would have chosen me. You stole this from me." I said, "You don't want this job, Marcy. Who put these ideas in your head?" Tears tumbled down her cheeks and her breathing became choppy. "It was my mom's idea for me to move in with you. She and her Nephilim friends wanted me to keep an eye on you. I agreed to do it because I thought you knew something about my dad's death that you weren't telling me. If I got close to you, I thought maybe..." For the first time, I noticed the pearly dagger in her hands. It shined a lustrous white as if the sun's purest rays were trapped beneath the surface. It could only be Pepper's enchanted dagger. The nitwit hadn't been careful enough and had allowed Marcy to follow him here. Then he dumped the feathers and the dagger and bolted, leaving them to fall into Marcy's possession. I reached for her. "Marcy, don't touch me!" she shrieked. "Dante told me you killed my dad. How could you do it? How could you? I was sure it was Patch, but all along it was you!" she screeched hysterically. Despite the heat, a shiver of fear whipped up my spine. "I can explain." But I didn't think I could. Marcy's wild, overwrought expression hinted that she was spiraling into shock. I doubted she'd care to know that her dad had forced my hand when he'd attempted to send Patch to hell. "Give me the dagger." "Get away from me!" she scrabbled out of reach. "Dante and I are going to tell everyone. What will the Nephilim do to you once they know you murdered the Black Hand?" I studied her carefully. Dante must have only just learned I'd killed Hank. Otherwise, he would have told the Nephilim long ago. Patch hadn't given up my secret, which left Pepper. Somehow, Dante had gotten to him. "Dante was right," Marcy spat. cold rage bubbling up in her voice. You stole the title from me. It was supposed to be mine. And now I've done what you couldn't. I freed the Nephilim. When that fire finishes, every fallen angel on Earth will be chained in hell.
Dante is working for fallen angels, I said, frustration sharpening my tone.
No, Marcy said. You are.
She swiped Pepper's blade at me, and I jumped back, tripping. Smoke pressed down on me, fully obscuring my vision.
Does Dante know you burned the feathers?
I yelled up at Marcy, but she gave